Hi, and welcome to the They Call Me the Ghost podcast, a podcast for those looking for good stories, looking for adventure. Today's episode is Science to Wipe the Mind, Dream Come True or Nightmare? Wipe what's wrong and fill the mind with what's better. This miracle cure could be your dream come true or your worst nightmare, depending on who's in control. Narrated by me, the ghost, each and every time. Let's get started. Hello, it's the ghost. Welcome to your weekly dose of the real world, where truth is stranger than fiction and things are not always as they seem. Bad memories, they can really ruin someone. They can be heavy and dark and come back to haunt us time and time again. Sometimes they can even take us to dark places, and we can be desperate to get rid of them or run from them, hide from them. Some victims of a past they cannot unsee or unfeel would do anything to stop it. Would you? Refresh yourself like you never thought possible. You could come out of it free of the things that have held you back and return with a free mind, able to concentrate on what your wants are and your dreams and goals for the first time without interruption. Wouldn't that sound amazing? Well, it would be, and the opportunity was there for those who really needed it until what they were trying to protect for the benefit of many got into the wrong hands. They call me the ghost. I was an agent for the CIA, but today I'm an independent operative working on the side of the mysterious and unbelievable. And today is a story of how it only takes a few to get in the way of real progress. Take a listen and enjoy. As always, I've changed the names of all involved and changed other exact details, keeping the real feel and mood of what went on while protecting privacy where need be. Okay, this job. If someone can get into our minds for real and change what's in there, I mean, you could change someone's life. And whether you are on the side of this would be a good thing, or this would be a bad thing, it still would be amazing either way, something amazing to accomplish. And that's exactly what Dr. Emerson Phillips was trying to do, get into the mind in a way that he could help change people. And just so you know, Dr. Phillips is not a bad guy, and in fact, his initiative started because of our soldiers. With it being Veterans Day on Monday, this job came to mind. There are people out there trying to help, and Emerson was one of them. He meant to do something good for those who really needed it. Do we all need our unwanted memories wiped from our minds? No, not really. We are human. We need to deal for the most part. But his project was for those who saw things no one should see and did things no one should have to do, coming back with disorders that basically handicapped them for the rest of their lives. His own son was in the army, and he was so affected, he chose not to see his life play out. He couldn't handle it, even though what he had seen and done was behind him. He lived it every single day, and it got to be too much. I tell you this so that you know that Emerson's project was filled only with good intentions. He wanted to give those considered permanently wounded from war, mentally, a second chance at life, a fair chance at their new lives as citizens. They fought for us, he would say, so should we not fight for them? And he saw himself as one of those fighters, and I do have to respect that. This request came in, and the requester tells me about who he is and where he worked, and I knew the place, although I hadn't been there. He's part of a major research center that is set off from anything mainstream. It's located, and all their work takes place on a small island, the only residents being those working on very unique projects that when they start out, appear to have a long way to go. Emerson tells me that his focus, his project, was at the end of a long stretch of good and bad, but they were in a very successful testing phase when things turned on him, and they turned quickly. If the situation was not resolved, things could go very wrong, also very quickly, with the chance of controlling it diminishing with every single day. He tells me that he will fly me and whoever I need with me to where he is if I might just be willing to entertain the idea of working with someone in his position, tucked away in the deep research that he does. He tells me that people can and are being affected by techniques and technologies that should not be out there. And this is big and dangerous where it all is, and he needs help. To bring in any help that would be spotted or tracked is a definite no-go. That's how he and those above him are now looking to me. Now, I don't know what all this is about yet when I'm reading all of this, but I respect the man's position enough to know that it's something I need to take a look at. If it's something really big that does need to get taken care of, and if I can help, then of course I would like to. I get Frankie because of his military background, and he and I take off. And I'd love to share with you where we're going, but I can't do that. But just know we have to travel, and then we're flown in by private jet to this island. And remember, I had not been there before, and neither has anyone on my team. And just flying in, you knew right away that this place was not going to be like any place we had been to before, and it wasn't. First of all, everything was perfect. Trees precisely placed along the sidewalks, all the buildings constructed with this bluish-green glass. There were only a few cars on the island. Those were for the heads and people traveling. At any other time, you'd be traveling by cart. Bigger than your average golf cart, these carts were blue, fitted with front windows and guards and larger wheels. They almost looked like off-road golf carts, if that was a thing. There was no off-roading there. I mean, the grass was just as perfect as everything else. There was not a building or living quarters. They had these apartment-like homes there. Then it was just all grass up to the small hills and mountains that were on the island. It was very nice. We land and are directed to our cart, and it's not manned. And we learn that they can be, but pretty much you can hit a button, kind of like an elevator, to go to the next place you need to be on the island. The island's broken up by zone and building, and so the cart is programmed to know. So we get in, and we're taken to our cart, and it knew to welcome us even, and then off we went, and it was that easy. Anyway, we get beyond the wow of all of that stuff, and it was off to one of those glass buildings for our first meeting. Frankie and I grab our bags when we get there, and we're brought up to where Emerson is. There's an amazing view from his office of the island and the ocean beyond it. And I say office, but even those are unique. There's no main desk, you know, with the visitor chairs like we're used to seeing. Instead, it's all a sitting area, couch, chairs, all comfortable stuff like you might have in a living room. But they fit the style of the place. They're covered in this light silver cloth. The table in front of the couch is made of glass. The couch faces one of the side walls. The table has two keyboards on it, no computers. And Emerson invites us to sit down on the couch, and we do. And he takes a seat in a chair off to the side of that and picks up one of those keyboards. And from his lap, he types in a few things, and then the wall across from the couch lights up. It's more than a wall. It's a screen that looks like a wall when it's not on, I guess you'd say. As it's booting up, he turns to Frankie and I and explains how he wishes this was all under better circumstances, that they are doing great things on the island. Unfortunately, this meeting with us is not about how great everything's going, though. On the wall screen, he pulls up a folder named the Sheffield Project. It says the name comes from the first guy who was willing to be tested in the Mind Wipe Project. Turned out to be a success for the most part, he says. The man was wiped of the memories he was looking to forget. That part was undoubtedly a great success. The memories that once haunted him were gone. However, there were also some unwanted effects. When you come out of a treatment that they do, there are different steps and phases you go through. And for Sheffield, everything seemed fine at first. But over time, he and his wife came to realize there was something missing. Sheffield was not all himself. The short and sweet of that was that when they removed some of the memories, they seemed to have feelers to other thoughts and feelings. The memories did. And so it took something from everything else as well. Taking even a small part of someone can actually change a lot about a person. Emerson explains that that piece was their last hurdle in all of this to conquer, one they were still working on. For Sheffield, the whole process changed how he saw things and perceived them. It changed some of his opinions and had an effect on his personality and character as well. It even changed his relationship with his wife. In short, by losing the memories, he lost part of the good and growth that came with them, clearly a problem that needed to be resolved. Sheffield went on with his life, minus the ugly recollections that used to take him over, but now had the new problem of trying to put together parts of his life in a new way. Sheffield knew the risks going into all of this, and he didn't lose the memories of that. The whole thing was good in one way and unfortunate in others. The project continued, however, and it was trials like that one, like Sheffield, with willing subjects looking for that chance at anything that might help them with their memories of horrible things. In the last year, Emerson's team felt like they were very close to figuring things out and finalizing the last stage of the Mind Wipe project, the stage of release. They felt the project was close to being released as something real and official that could help, specifically our soldiers, at least at first. And Frankie and I are listening to all of this, and throughout the presentation, we saw the pictures of those working in the lab, pictures of Sheffield and his wife in different parts of the project. It was very interesting. I felt for all of those that offered themselves up for the experiment, but I could also understand why they might do it. It all sounded like it was working out, though. I was very curious at that point why he needed me and my team's help with anything. Unlike Emerson, we were not neuroscientists, so we probably can't take it beyond what they've already done. Well, it's not long after that presentation when I learn exactly why he did call me to the island. He shuts down the presentation and sets the keyboard back down on the table and turns to Frankie and I again and lets out a big sigh. He's obviously less excited to tell us the rest of the story. He says that aside from the issues in the project itself, they have new issues, and says that if they could figure out a way to remove the covetousness in people, that would take care of a lot of the issues in the world itself. Now, Frankie and I look at each other at the mention of covetousness. In essence, greed. People that have an immoral and unjust desire for wealth and things that go along with that seem to like to take things that are not theirs. And they will do things to get more than they deserve or should have. We can see where this is leading, and we're shifting in our seats, knowing how bad this could be if we're right. And we are. Emerson tells us that they had a bad seed working on their team with them, a plant. He lowers his head as if ashamed to admit that their technology and processes have been stolen. That not only has it been taken, it's being used. He's sure of it. And it all needs to be stopped. And that is why he's asked for our help. This erasing of parts of the mind in the wrong hands could be disastrous. Calling in mainstream authorities at this juncture could cause dangerous exposure, could cause mass hysteria and paranoia among the people. Therefore, it was decided from Emerson's level all the way up to the top to call in for outside private professional help. And that would be us. More than being floored by all that has gone on in these labs, from the good to the bad, Frankie and I were both flooded with this feeling of urgency. You know, where is it all now? The three of us spent the rest of that day meeting with others on Emerson's team, learning about the plant that was on the island for 5 of the 7 years of the project, by the way. This whole scheme was set up and they carried it out for a while. And this group, whoever they were, was waiting for the right time. And evidently, with the progress Emerson's team had made, they thought they were there. Learning that brought me to my next question. What does Emerson think we're dealing with as far as his product goes? If the product is good and they were very close to it being used, could it be possible, could we at least hope, that those they were using it could be using it for something good? Well, Emerson's answer was not what I was looking for. He repeats what he said earlier and said that they were close to the stage of release, but they were not all the way there yet, something that might have been confusing to anyone looking to steal it all. And on the outside, it could have looked like they were really there in the final stage. But those who thought that were wrong, Emerson says. And so now it's out there and it's not working properly. The problems they were still having with this thing had to do with more feelers, and these things were reaching. It was becoming apparent that with every single event in our lives came reactions and slight changes to us that over time build up and help create who we are. People grow through their experiences. Take some of that, and if it goes too far, you could take more than you meant or that you expected to. We talk about all of this for a while, even with Emerson's team. The problems here are endless, including things like, you know, what I've said already. Then there's the risk that this could be used to target things in our minds that we don't want removed. Out of a very controlled and tested environment, if this gets in the wrong hands, it could be used for the wrong reasons. I mean, imagine forgetting who you know, where you work, or what you've learned in your life. You could almost erase a person, even though they could still stand up in front of you. On the other end of it all is another option that they were working on, but that was nowhere near done. And that was the ability to reverse their process so that not only could they take things out of your mind, they could put things in as well. Again, in the wrong hands, you might end up fearing or hating the person you love the most, not realizing that you have children, or maybe not even knowing or remembering who you are. It could all be different. These lab thieves were not interested in helping those around them. It was obvious that their intentions were on the dark side. What Emerson needs is for the stolen product to be found and shut down. In its form, it is dangerous and could spread from there. We realize the importance, and I do agree to help in any way I can. I have Frankie's support. This thing that Emerson is doing could be a help, but in the wrong hands, it could destroy many. While we've been talking about all of this, we're having Jagger and Scarlett flown in, by the way. And when they get there, it's time for us as a team to do our own detective type work on the island to see what we can find. And between Frankie, Scarlett, Jagger, and I, we do find some interesting things. Our first stop was Daniel's quarters, where he spent his personal time. And all spaces are set up the same, is what Emerson told us. You have your living area, your kitchen, an area to sleep in, your bathroom, typical one-bedroom apartment, really. Only all of these on the island are pretty much the same. Same silver decor as in the offices. They each have one small balcony, enough for two people to sit outside. But the living quarters weren't about, you know, entertaining or socializing. They were meant really only for you. They had a lot of common areas on the island, which made things a little different than would be normal for you or me. Your personal space was meant as a place of rest and a place to re-energize. You would eat and sleep and maybe participate in some of your small personal hobbies. But that's really all your personal quarters were for. I mean, if you wanted to hang out with friends or have a get-together or do something social, you would use the island's common areas. And Emerson explains that with how concentrated the work is on the island, you're not doing a whole lot of socializing while working. So they encouraged the getting out and actually interacting with others. So that's why it was set up that way. Anyway, Daniel's place has been emptied out and we start to go through it. You know, no space untouched. We go through every little bit of it. And through our meticulous searching, we end up finding one loose metal tile in the wall. It's next to the floor in the corner of Daniel's sleeping room. Behind that tile, we find a small pouch, like envelope. And inside of that is one single USB. We continue searching the place inch by inch, but that's all we come out with. The island authorities missed it. On the USB, we find a document. The title is one word, Exodus, and it seems to be a declaration of the aims and goals of this mission, whatever it is, that Daniel's a part of. And then we also find a list of names. The way that we find it all tells us that something must have happened on Daniel's way out. He obviously kept this thing tucked away in secret, but if he wanted to protect it, why would he leave it behind? He must have been in a rush. But why? Why would there be a need to rush after they planned everything out so carefully? Well, our next stop is one of the lab buildings where Daniel did his work. There was a computer there, and it's the one that he used to work on, and I start to dig through that. Working with the FBI's digital detectives in the past and through my connections, I had some things put together for me and the team so that on jobs like this, with the forensic tools available to us, we're able to find all the recovered files. Things someone might have thought they deleted. We can see how he was sorting and saving and deleting files. He was copying everything as well to machines that were conveniently no longer in the lab. When it was time, Daniel removed them. His job on the island was to store and protect data, and he had many resources at his fingertips. No one would have questioned the amount of equipment he asked for, and he had the luxury of time, and he was very careful. We also find out a few things about the group that he was working with as well. They appear to have a work location of their own. Doesn't exactly surprise us, right? They have to have somewhere to go. They don't have an entire small island dedicated to their work like where Emerson is, but from what we can tell, they are on an island. Greenland. Not a busy place, not a place you might think of when talking about high-tech science. So, okay, we have Daniel and their labs. We need to track down Daniel, who Emerson tells us was last tracked down and seen by his own people in Chicago. We also need to get to Greenland and check out this lab. Apparently, the space they're in, they purchased over a decade ago and have slowly been updating it and building out this lab space. Something similar in idea, actually, to Emerson's Island, a lab where they can work on things that seem out of reach or maybe even not possible. Only unlike Emerson's work, which is meant for good, the work in this lab is without a doubt more malevolent in nature. So when our work on the island with Emerson is done, at least up to that point, Frankie and I split up. He will go with Ryder to Chicago, and Scarlett and Jagger will come with me to Greenland. And I need to mention or remind you here that Frankie was in the military. He and I both agree that he would be on this job, but not in the very beginning. He would not go to these labs. We don't know what we're going to find, and we don't need him or want him in a sensitive situation that he doesn't expect with regards to all of this. It's team first, always. Harley is not with either group, and she's staying back at the warehouse in case we need her, or we need her to send us anything or help out in any other way. And so basically, Chicago, okay? Frankie and Ryder find Daniel, not after that much searching, since we already had a lead on where he was, which was hiding out in this office kind of loft space, sort of pretending to work there and living there for the time being. He's pretty much surprised to see anyone and doesn't want to say anything. But it's not like Frankie isn't just a little bit intimidating, and Ryder has her ways as well. They got what they came for in the end. They're able to find out that with Daniel's job done and carried out, he's now supposed to be there laying low and staying out of the way and not talking to anyone until he gets his next orders. Talking to him, it doesn't take Frankie and Ryder long to figure out, or for Daniel to admit even, that he's slowly going crazy. Because with every day he's there, he's realizing more and more what he's done and what's happened and the possible dangers around it. Daniel turned out to be actually quite giving in his information after he knew that he'd been made. It's almost as if he was really relieved to get it off his chest, and he ended up providing some very helpful insight into a few things. It was obvious to Frankie and Ryder at this point that Daniel was no threat. He was just a very smart man that was used in a very big and manipulative game for others to get what they wanted. Daniel did not know that the labs that we're looking for were in Greenland. All he knew was the name of their lab, there being the heads of all of this, the Exodus Labs, which is also the name of their group, Exodus. Evidently, they thought this was clever because in their minds, they were exiting the confines of normal society and taking things into their own hands, doing things their way with whatever was available to them. This was the theme of everything they did. Anyway, Daniel was taken there once, but was never told exactly where he was going. Anyone not in the top rung is either blindfolded or knocked out for the trip. It's all kept very secret, and then once there, you would have no idea, he says. Even though Daniel did not know where this lab was, he did have some information for us because he'd been there, and Franco was able to get some of that from him. Daniel knew that part of the building was actually inside of a mountain. The group was very proud of the fact that they were the ones that blew through the rock and extended the building into the mountainside. He also talked about the different levels and areas. There were three levels in the front part of the building, the part that you could see from the outside, but once you got inside the mountain, there was so much more. There was a main level and then two floors below that, and he said that they were all color-coded, like they would have been in the old days. The colors had meaning. As it was, the wooden buildings were all marked by the profession they served. So commercial houses were red, for example. Hospitals were yellow. Telephone companies were green. And fish factories were blue, while the police stations were black. In the lab, in the portion inside the mountain, there were levels and areas separated by these colors, red, yellow, green, and blue. And the people working there, they felt like they were actually the ones in charge. So they wore black. Thought it was fitting. Daniel tells Frankie and Ryder that there's a lot going on in the lab, more than just this mind wipe project. When he got there, he got a tour, and there were other projects going on, although he only got the details of the one, mind wipe. Tells Frankie that what we're looking for is on the second level down, the final level, and that we'll know when we're there. And then he kind of goes off on a tangent and starts talking about how he wishes he could have his own mind wiped. He felt it would be the only way he could go on. He can't live knowing what has happened here. It overwhelms him. He was well aware of the fact that the product was not ready when it was taken. There's no way it could work correctly, and now it's out there. He said they just wouldn't listen to him, the leaders of it all, about how the final kinks were not worked out, and they rushed everything out of there. They wanted this ability, and they didn't want to wait any longer. That's what ruined him. He tells Frankie and Ryder that this was not how it was supposed to go down. Frankie can see he is overwhelmed, and that the guy is in a bit of torment. So Frankie changes the subject, asks him about the document and the list that we found inside his wall in his living quarters on the island. Daniel admits that in the rush, there was no time to go back for that stuff, and he's a little hesitant to talk about those things at first, but Frankie and Ryder get it out of him eventually. The list is an ongoing target list, which is what it looked like, filled with people of money, status, and influence. The document was their guide, their purpose, and what they needed to keep with them wherever they went in honor of Exodus and their mission, which was to take what is rightfully the world's, basically. And if no one else was going to get in there and take control of these opportunities, they were. They would not be bound by the rules out there. They did not believe in a planet held back by the rulers of one race, because according to Daniel, people of Exodus were very big believers in beings of other worlds, and they wanted to be the ones recognized as prepared and ready to work together should they come. They felt that when the day came, it would be the people of Exodus that would be spared should conflict arise. So these guys were smart, but they were smart and paranoid. And that sums up what happened in Chicago. As for Greenland, Jagger, Scarlet, and I get to the small fishing village, which was our landing point, you know, with all the color-coded buildings, a representation of old Greenland. It was a beautiful place. However, it's also easy to see why this is such a great hiding place for something like this, what's going on. The people in this place, they don't live like a lot of us do. They're not suspecting of what's all going on around them. They don't dig in deeply, expecting everything that's going on either. They're trusting, and they mind their own business, to each his own unless there's a problem. That's how they are, which is great for Exodus, and actually great for us at the moment because we're trying to get through the place unnoticed. I've arranged for our travels, and after we get there, we take a helicopter ride, and then we spend some time on some snowmobiles, but we make it to the lab, just outside Exodus Labs. No one that lives there thinks anything of them being in the building they're in or the work that they have going on there. It used to be an old center where they processed the cold gold that was mined there, something that's been shut down for a while. This group bought the old building and fixed it all up, and now they present themselves as chemists who study plants and their role in medicine. You know, just another piece to the pharmaceutical business, and no one really thinks anything of it. Well, we get there, and with a few hints we've been able to gather on the place and from what Harley has been able to dig up for us, we have an idea of where we might be able to get in. I mean, nothing's a guarantee here. We don't have anybody on site that can help us, and none of us have ever been here before. But we get there, and we hike over to these smaller doors where they supposedly accept small deliveries and where they do some of their pickups and things like that. It's sort of out of the way. And it's also a good place for employees to gather to either gossip, you know, take a break, have a smoke, whatever they feel like doing. But the hint was that we might find one of those doors slightly open or not all the way secured. And we don't get as lucky as to find a door open, but we do find one that's not fully secured. They've only engaged the lock on the door handle, so we're able to break in through that. Not knowing what we're going to find on the other side, we open the door slowly. The room is dark, but there's a little light coming in from the next room beyond that, where we are. It seems to be some other kind of storage room. Feels like we got lucky at first until we hear the people talking right outside of the door to this place, the door to that next storage room. Our door's slightly ajar, and we see four people standing there. They're all in black lab coats, just like Daniel said they would be. There are two women and two men. We can't go anywhere else as long as they're there, so all we can do is wait. We catch a little bit of their conversation, though, which happens to be about how they aren't sure they should continue with what they're doing. One of them is even worried because no one is set to leave the place until the spring. It's really April when we're there, by the way, so they should have a good break in the snow after May sometime. So that's probably what they're talking about. It's kind of hard to get people in and out of there when it's high snow season otherwise. Well, we have to wait for about 20 more minutes before these guys are done chatting. They're obviously hiding out themselves for this little conversation. The room they're in, also storage, has a fridge in it, some other things, but it's nothing special, just some other side room. So we get past that, and we have to do a lot of dodging and dipping before we get to anything that's actually useful to us. From Daniel's information, we know that there are the different areas and levels. There are also no windows, which you can't help but not notice. I mean, once you're on the inside, Daniel's right. There is nothing that would tell you where you are. If they could keep it from you in your travels to the place, you wouldn't have a clue. The main level to the mountainside, that's where we're ultimately trying to get to, and we do get there, but the main level of that breaks off into three different directions, and they're all labeled. One says cloning lab, the other says pathogen lab. And those two large wooden doors have small windows on them, and we look through them to check out what's going on. Behind the cloning door, we see two sectioned out areas. Each has multiple dentist-like chairs, and they're all connected by wires. Behind that, we see a pot of some kind, and it's filled with some sort of deep pink liquid. Then we also see a wall of glass jars. The wall is lit up, but from where we are, we can't make out what's in them. The set of chairs to the left has three lab coats attending to it, and two people in the chairs. One guy looks knocked out, and the other guy is fighting against them, whatever's going on. He's struggling, but he's cuffed both at the hands and the feet, and he's yelling. We can see, but we can't hear what he's saying. Behind the pathogen lab's door, we see a giant lit-up blue digital map of the world. There are people in there, not in lab coats, but instead they're in these biohazard suits. Looking around, we see biohazard everywhere. There are sealed glass rooms, fume hoods, all the things for making dangerous chemicals. Are they trying to help with diseases and make breakthroughs? Highly doubt it with this group. The third option in that area, the third door, is just a door. There are no windows. And when we open that, we see it's stairs. Next to the door to the stairs, we also see a bunch of black lab coats hanging there. Probably required for anyone entering this area. Makes sense. So we grab three, and Jagger and Scarlett and I continue on together down the stairs. There's no reason to get stuck in any other area other than where we need to be. And there's no reason to split up at this point. We head down the stairs, and we quickly realize that the only problem there is that there are three of us together in a stairwell. There's nowhere to hide, with only lab coats to maybe help us blend in. We don't have much for cover. You know, up until that point, there were areas that we could duck into so that we could stay out of the way. But we have no choice where we are at that point, and we just need to keep going until we find the Mind Wipe Project. The next level down is set up a little bit differently, and we unexpectedly find partial glass walls down there. So when we come out of the stairwell, we're right there. So we immediately fall to the floor so that we're below where the glass is. We don't have a lot of options here. Basically, you get down there and it's just a small area. There's a wall to your right, a wall to your left, the glass doors into the space that's down there in front of you, which the sign above that say time travel. And then behind us, there are two more doors. We dare to peek into the time travel space and we see four large steel boxes. There's no one in that room, no lab coats, but one of the boxes has steam coming out of one of the pipes sticking out of it. Not really wanting to see what or who might step out of that or what might happen, we turn to the two doors across from the time travel space. One is to another staircase, and the other is to a room that looks like it's not being used. So we head into that room to do a check-in of ourselves and our situation. There are two desks in there. They're crooked, and they're kind of off to the side. The room looks like it's not really being used, maybe more for storage. And so we go behind those desks just in case anyone walks in. We know from Daniel's information that where we're headed next should be what we're looking for. We need to be ready, but we also need to take a minute to discuss the place in general. We're a bit surprised by what we have seen so far. These guys are serious, and they're not messing around with their goals. Exodus Labs is a place of wrong things. We will get to that a little bit later, but we know and need to be prepared for serious. And we're looking for Mind Wipe. Unlike the other areas, we're going to be walking through that next door. We break out a few items from our packs to prepare ourselves in case we need them for defense. We each have different things that we clip to our belts and things, but our main piece for defense that we chose for this trip is our specially made photon ray guns. These will very accurately take out our targets by shooting out concentrated light beams with a maximized heat concentration that does a lot more damage than this little device looks like it could. Basically, it shoots out a very thin but powerful laser that will burn through anything it hits. With the three of us ready to go and armed, we carefully leave that small room and head down to that second lower level. We get down there and we can immediately tell that this is their main event. Unlike the other areas where there were big doors and dark hallways to get around, this floor was lit up in a different way, more glorified. The sign above the main doors said clearly, Mindwipe, a name that wasn't even theirs. Project Mindwipe belonged to Emerson and his team. And I said main doors because on this floor, there was more than just one entrance to the project. The hallway went all around it. It was in a circle. This floor had all glass walls and all glass doors from floor to ceiling. The minute we landed and saw that, we just started walking, as if we belonged there. We had no choice, and we didn't want to be spotted or stand out. Walking the perimeter allowed us to check out what was going on. We chat along the way as if engaged in something serious. Again, we want to look like we belong there and not draw attention to ourselves. But we can only walk so far before we need to do something. Along the way, though, we noticed two men. One of them is talking to a lab coat, and he seems to be frustrated. He actually hits himself in the head a couple of times and then stands up and starts pacing around the small glass room that they're in. The other man is in a different room and is sitting in his chair surrounded by three lab coats. Instead of looking agitated and pacing and things like that, he looks dumbfounded. He's more looking into space and the lab coats are talking to him. We're pretty much in observation mode as we circle the place, but then we see more people. As we walk and approach the other side of this floor, we see not a lab-type room like the other ones that we saw. It sort of reminded me, actually, of one of those rooms you might see and go to if you were part of a marketing research group. Chairs lined up, people facing the front, waiting for something for them to look at. There were six people in those chairs, and they were waiting for something. Jagger and I and Scarlett are walking and talking and thinking about going in and just acting like we belong there when we see it. We see the room where everything Daniel brought over is. All the equipment is exactly like what we saw on the island. This is what Emerson was talking about. Daniel copied everything, put it all together on island equipment, and then removed it. And now we're looking right at it. We don't stop right there or anything. We actually keep going until we find a couple more of those doors that seem to lead to nowhere, until we find another one of those small rooms, and we duck into it. There's not really furniture to hide behind, but we don't really have a choice. We need to think about things. There we are, armed and ready to take on whatever might come at us, but at the same time, we know this is an entire facility. There's way more going on here than Emerson ever realized. There are lab coats everywhere, and with everyone in black, we can't even really tell who the actual full-on leaders are. To try to go in and rescue anyone under the Mindwipe project doesn't exactly seem to make any sense at that time. And on top of Emerson's issues, there appear to be other issues there as well. Where did all the other technology come from? These guys seem to be hijackers. If they know all and can do all, they wouldn't have needed to spend 5 years with Emerson. I can only assume that they have stolen other information as well. We talk about our options and what really needs to happen here and what we as a team should do. And we end up with two things. One, this lab needs to be shut down altogether. None of these projects should be happening. But we are only there for one thing. So again, we have a couple of options. Either we barge in and act like we are taking over the place, which is not really what we're set up and equipped to do. We're more set up to defend ourselves, not take on an entire lab like this. Or we just stick to the mission, which is to go in and secure Emerson's project. That is what we should do. That's what we decide to do. But that's not all we do. Before anything happens, we get a hold of Harley. And this is why I like to have someone at home, at home base. With any job, no matter how much we think we know that's going on, there can always be the element of surprise. We can't know exactly what we're going to get. To have someone on the ground, in a safe place, ready to help in any way they can actually be the difference of life and death in some situations. Frankie and Ryder are pretty much done. They were done a while ago where they were, and Harley is on it. And I've said it before, and this situation's no different. Should any of us find ourselves in a situation, the backups, they know what to do. And Harley, well, anyone on the team, is more than reliable. We have other teams that we can call on when it's something this big like this. Big groups that I've used before that can come in and help secure a large situation. Others are good for cleanup and things like that, but what we need here is a team that can stop what is happening and call upon the next level of security to take care of business. This job was not what we expected. It was much bigger. It was a bigger threat overall to the people of this world than really anyone could have known. They were so good in all the measures they took with the people they brought here and things like that. But like we see so much of the time, the confidence of those getting away with something, you know, it outweighs their logic in the security they actually need. They forget things. They cut corners, things like that. Being hidden away like they were, Exodus, in Greenland, setting up their front, covering up their location from even those that were there, they thought they had it made. Who would really find them and get in like we had? In their minds, no one. But we did, and now we would be the biggest surprise coming until their actual takedown happened, which is about to happen shortly. And our job at that point was to get into the Mind Wipe lab and get to those computers and systems that they were using and shut them down. That's what we were there to do. We couldn't help the patients, not right then and there, if that was even possible at that point, but we could stop the process, which is what we were there to do, and sabotage it enough that it was not salvageable when we were done. I've come prepared, and after working with Emerson's techs on the island during that long day of meetings, I have what I need. If I can inject what I have into their system, there is no way anything on their end will work about 30 seconds after that. We can't move, though, until we have Harley's go-ahead. She has to get with everyone and get everyone in place, and then we will move just before the big troops will arrive. So if you can picture this, we're in a very small room with not a lot of cover, and we have to wait there another 3 hours before we can even do anything. When we do get the go-ahead, though, we move fast, and the cue was seeing Frankie. He and Ryder flew into that small fishing village that was Jagger, Scarlet, and I's landing spot, and Ryder stayed on the outskirts as another go-between level, and when Frankie makes his way in, it's a sign that the big backups were only minutes behind him. Frankie would be the distraction as he barges into the Mind Wipe lab and he makes his presence known. And as everyone focuses on him, Scarlet and I make our move and we rush the computers. Jagger is right behind us joining Frankie just to add to the distraction. And I have to give this place credit though, okay, because they had backups as well. Although they didn't secure the place overall as they should, within the facility, they had more going on than you would think at first. It seems like it only took, I don't know, seconds before these men in black jumpsuits that were armed, moving fast, arrived in the room. And anyone in lab coats retreated to one side of the room as if they had it all organized and they had prepared like a fire drill or something like that. Jagger and Frankie, they were in character though, and they started jumping all around and not making sense. Then Frankie broke out his ray gun and started shooting different targets in the room. What he and Jagger were doing was just causing confusion. Behind the scenes of their madness, Scarlet and I were taking down the computer system, and we only needed seconds really to do it, to inject the poison needed to take down what they had going on. This was a job where I actually wished there was a small camera so that I could have seen what was all happening at that time. I mean, it all happened so fast, and everyone was moving in all different directions, doing different things. And just when the first person actually noticed that Scarlet and I were even there, every door to that room, to that particular lab, burst open. There were at least 3 men, all in black, that entered each door at the same time. This was not something that these lab coats had figured into their fire drill, right? They were not ready for it. These men were our guys. Behind the men that busted into the room, there were more men lining the hallway along the perimeter. They were everywhere. It was a tense moment. It was exhilarating, and it was confusing to those it was happening to. That room was taken down and secured faster than anything you could imagine. It was spectacular. They came in and knew who we were. They covered us while closing up shop for the guys working the Mind Wipe lab. And the 2 subjects we saw earlier that they were working on, they disappeared immediately. They were taken to safety. And the rest was what it was. We were really the discovery crew as far as the labs went, but we did accomplish what Emerson asked us to do, which is to take down the operation he was involved in. And we did do that. Once the special team arrived, we were no longer needed, and we didn't feel like we should be. Our job was done. We also did, though, uncover something that was much bigger than anyone expected. And in that situation, calling in the right people is what you need to do. No one needs to be a hero in all things. What's important is to know what to do in the right situations that you find yourself in. The backup teams that I call in are set up for this type of thing, and they know who, in the right chain of command, to be in touch with, and what leads to follow. In this case, everyone was on the right track, as it usually is in this type of thing. This operation was to be taken down immediately, and it was. The one good piece of news that we got after all was said and done was that the two men that were in the lab that we saw still had a chance. The others that were in line in that marketing research type room for work to be done were handled psychologically. Nothing had happened to them yet, and they would work on them until they felt comfortable. But with those two guys that were in the lab, unlike the island, the Exodus labs did save what they extracted. The island did not. If you wanted your memory gone, it was gone, gone forever. They weren't going to save it so you could get it back later. But Exodus Labs did save everything. The men that were having issues were flown to the island and taken care of in the best way possible, returning to them what they had lost. I was able to infect the entire system that they had, so the whole thing would have to happen all over again, basically, if they wanted to continue. They would need a whole nother Daniel, a new elaborate plan and place to go. And that wasn't going to happen. The mountain portion of the old cold gold facility was destroyed. Took a while, but the original building was preserved. And the people involved, I mean, they're not murderers or anything, but those involved at Exodus were bad. And they were taken to a place where they would be handled in ways that me and my team were not exactly privy to. But I can assure you they will not be causing problems again. That I do know. That's how these guys work. You know, if you're someone up to no good, you definitely don't want these guys, our backup guys, coming in and shutting down your operation. In the end of it all, we learned more about the different projects they had going on. I mean, the cloning project, that's pretty self-explanatory. The pathogen lab, we found out, was for their disease by design project, put together for the purpose of mass regional extinction. Not so good. And then you have the time travel, again, pretty self-explanatory. Lastly, Mind Wipe, Emerson's project, which let's not forget, the whole point of that was for the sole purpose of helping soldiers who come back into society so that they have a chance at being civilians, just like the rest of us. A lot of times with our jobs, we are in and out fairly quickly, usually. There's a job to do, we go in and we get it done. This one, though, lasted a while, lingered. Although we were in and out of the island in the beginning in good time, there were things that we felt we wanted to know, and there were things that people wanted to know about us when it was all said and done. It's not as if you can clear out a place like that and handle every person in it in a week. So, you get the picture. It took time, and everyone had to be patient. In the end, and in summary, I can tell you that these are not the kinds of things that in one way you don't want to know about, but in another way, you're kind of glad that you just know it was handled. That's all you need to know. There are always people that want to take something that is a good idea and make it bad. If you haven't noticed by now, in a lot of my jobs, it's the theme, good versus evil, if you will. Just when one thing is figured out, another thing pops up. We are glad that we are all individuals, but it is our individuality that can surprise us. In our individuality, we have all had separate lives, and with those bring different histories, different memories, different experiences. When do we know that it's enough? When do we know that it's too much? That I can't say. Everyone does have a breaking point, and the efforts to try to help those who are about to head that way is a good thing. But when it turns and you're taking what is good for one for the purpose of your own gain, it doesn't really help anyone in the end. These guys were weak, in my opinion, although they felt very strong. They took what was not theirs, and they used it in ways not intended. It would have done much more than that if they had gotten away with it. Imagine not knowing what you did yesterday, if it was real. Imagine if there were people out there that you were close to just days ago, and that was stolen from you, and you had no idea today. If you came to realize any of that, how angry would you be? It's no one's right to take what is ours, good or bad. And although there are a lot of things that we would rather not look at about our past, or would rather not know about ourselves even, It is us. It is who we are. Maybe instead of wishing those things weren't there, we should appreciate who we've become because of it all. And that's the end of this story and job today. Thank you for listening to this job. I appreciate you taking the time to be here with me this Friday, this weekend. Like, subscribe, and turn on your notifications. And until next time, know that I always have more stories to share. And I will talk to you all soon.